All right, I've got something there for the parents. I've got something for the mums. I came across this, given that today is multi-generation, we celebrate multi-generation church. You know, it's not just small people or old people. You know, what makes up church is multi-generation. So how to be a mum in 2019? You guys ready? Make sure your children's academic, emotional, psychological, mental, spiritual, physical, nutritional and social needs are met while being careful not to overstimulate, understimulate, improperly medicate, helicopter or neglect them in a screen-free, processed foods-free, GMO-free, negative energy-free, plastic-free, body-positive, socially conscious, egalitarian, but also authoritative, nurturing, but fostering of independence, gentle, but not overly permissive, pesticide-free, two-story, multilingual home, preferably in a cul-de-sac, with a backyard, and 1.5 siblings, spaced at least 2 years apart for proper development. That is the generation that we are part of. There's a note here, it says down the bottom, how to be a mum in every generation before this one. Feed them occasionally. That's the generation I grew up in, I don't know about you guys. Man alive. All right, you know what? I love this church, I love that it's family. And I've been part of this church for 20 plus years, you guys know that. And it actually scares me to think about the life that I would have lived had I not had Heather in my life, or where's Savita somewhere over there. I've known these guys for 20-something years, and you guys know me as, you know, the guy that does stuff upstairs with the kids, and occasionally they let me out. Yeah, that'd be a fair assumption. We've been doing Diary of a Godly Kid upstairs, so that, you know, I stole it from Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I know. And so we believe in godly kids, and some of the godly kids that we have, they honour and obey their parents. We're working on it. It's a team thing. It's a family thing, right? You know, they are gratitude, kids that show gratitude, the kids that show servanthood, and the kids that pray. And I believe there that as a family, if we get that right together, then we'll have a generation of kids that, like Heather said before, that will be active in this generation, but they'll be active throughout. And I am testament of that. If that's a word. Can I be a testament of that?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool, sweet. I don't know, because I've been around for a while. You know what? Before I came into this church, no, sorry, I won't go back that far. I've been part of this church, and it scares me, like I said before, to think about what I would have done or who I would have become had not this church been involved. And, you know, I came from a single parent household, and I grew up with a mum that loved me, and I grew up with my brother. And every week she would take us to church, and it was important. And that was bestowed on me as a young person. But despite my mum's love for me and mum's care for me and nurture, I still grew up with plenty of insecurities. Who's got some insecurities? Don't wave. It's all right. We'll deal with them later. But I would look for acceptance from different people, and I would do things, or I'd say things, or I'd be part of things, looking for value in other people's relationships, or looking for acceptance in that particular person. And as a result, I would, you know, it was just temporary, yeah? But, you know, came to a point when something's got to feed me that's not temporary. And I was running up a hill in Unanderra, go Unanderra, as a young person, and the Holy Spirit dropped a verse into my heart, bam! And I was like, I actually didn't know what part of the Bible that was because I hadn't been reading that bit. And so I had to go home and look it up. And God had spoken two verses into my life from Proverbs, and it said, let not love and faithfulness ever leave you. Bind them around your neck, write them on the tablets of your heart. In doing so, you'll receive and win favor with both God and man. And although I didn't realize it back then, I realize now that if I was having any chance of living that out, if I was going to have any chance of actually being the person that God had called me to be in the verses that he'd spoken into my life, I actually needed to be part of this church. And I needed to be part of the family of God. Because I believe that although I'd shown you, you know, in isolation, I was looking for value and I was looking for identity and I was looking for acceptance and doing those sorts of things, that was only ever going to be temporary. And it's not until you come into the church of God and come into the family of God, and I want to use family on purpose because it is a family there that we put up with people sometimes. And these guys put up with me You guys talk about 70 times 7, you know, that's 490. I'm telling you right now, over 25 years, Heather has put up with me more than 490 times.
26 years.
Something like that. Like I said, she's counting. And I want to say, as part of this church, you know what? We're going to become the man and lady that you've been called to be. Not necessarily the man and lady, but you're going to become the man or the lady that you've been called to be through the church. True? So I think that someone in the Bible actually had an understanding of this, and this was Paul, and we know Paul, the guy that wrote most of the New Testament, and he tried to talk it to Timothy, and he tried to bestow this value of what church family was about. And we're going to try and explore that, what church family actually means today, in a really quick message. But he had this understanding, and you know, Paul sends off Timothy, and Timothy's looking after a church down in the church of Ephesus. And I imagine Timothy sitting down one day, and he's sitting on the couch, you know, looking after this church. And all of a sudden, there's a knock on the door, you know. You know, Timothy gets up and is like, whoa, it's like 8 o'clock, the mailman shouldn't have been here. But he runs over to the door type thing, and, you know, he's looking for the mailman, and the mailman's sure enough at the door and, you know, comes back with his, you know, with a letter. And it's addressed to Timothy, son of a Greek. And it's like, that's me, you know. And on the back there, he flips it over. And it says, sender, Paul, you know, a.k.a. Saul. All right, I know who it's from. And then address just says, return to sender and just take it to prison, pretty much, because that's where Saul spent lots of his time. So he opened up this message. And it's, you know, some instructions from Paul. And the first part of the message, you know, he starts reading. He says, dear Timothy, you're my boy. You're my boy, Timothy. My true son in the faith. There's the rest of my message. My true son in the faith. And he says, here's some instructions about looking after the church that I've established. And if you get these, then everything's going to go well. So the first thing he says in chapter one, he says, you know what? If anyone's talking smack, anyone talking down, you know, you deal with those people. You know, anyone that's talking some trash about your church or some false teachers, you deal with them. Get rid of them. Number two chapter comes along, and it, you know, what you need for a good church is you need a good worship team. Man alive, you need to look after worship. You know, make sure that they know the chord G, C, D, and E. Yeah. Then after that, it gets to chapter three, and it's like, okay, good churches have good leadership structures, so this is what makes a good leader, similar to the qualities that Zach has, you know. And if you know Zach, he's a leader. You know. Then it gets to four, and it changes direction of this whole chapter. Once upon a time, or the first three chapters, looking after church. Now the fourth chapter gets there, and Timothy's now, it's now personal. You know, Paul's about to get personal because he's his true son in the faith. He's about to start to have a look at some character aspects. And I want to pick up at chapter 6 here. Verse 6, not chapter 6. And I'll read a few things here that are going to, in the context of church as a family. Everything's in the context of church as a family. We're talking about family church. And when your father speaks to you, man alive, you better be listening. All right, verse 6. If you point these things out, which we just pointed out, to the brothers, you will be a good minister of Jesus Christ, brought up in the truths of the faith and the good things, a good teaching that you have followed. Verse 7. Have nothing to do with godless myths and old wives' tales. Rather, train yourself to be godly. Timothy picks up the message and like, what? Train myself to be godly? I'm looking after the church. I'm already looking after the church, Paul. What do you mean I'm training myself to be godly? Surely it would have been a prerequisite to come down and look after church to be godly, right? Surely that's a prerequisite. Maybe, you know, but then Paul's put this in and it's something there for Timothy. And so it's personal and it could almost be regarded as offensive. But he's like, you know what, Paul's talking to me, so I'm going to pick up my message again and we'll read on. It's Paul, he's talking, he's a good guy. For physical training is of some value, but godliness has value for all things, holding promise for both the present and the life to come. Timothy's still kind of a little bit cut. And you could almost imagine that Paul knew that Timothy was cut. You knew that his term had actually been offensive because it says in verse 9, Paul's about to reassert something to Timothy. Here we go. This is a trustworthy saying that deserves full acceptance. So Timothy goes back and he reads, Train myself to be godly. 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 And I think what Paul was saying to Timothy, it just doesn't matter where you are in your church. It doesn't matter if you're looking after a church. It doesn't matter if you're in a church, in a ministry, in a family. We're called to be godly. And we are called to train ourselves to be godly because this is family. It's like a mandate from Paul. Anything Paul says, I'm like, oh yeah, it's a mandate. Training ourselves to be godly. You know, but Timothy's not persuaded anymore, like he's not feeling too cut anymore, so he reads on. Command and teach these things in verse 11. Then verse 12, don't let anyone look down on you because you are young. Kids, don't let anyone look down on you because you are young. I remember Josh actually held this verse close to his heart when he was growing up. But some of us are sitting there going, actually, I don't get anything out of that. Like, I don't mind. And so, you know, if people are older or people are younger, it doesn't really matter. But I think, you know, we've got to understand that there was a previous conversation that's gone on between Paul and Timothy at that moment. And it would have looked a little bit like something like this, you know. Timothy's getting ready to go down. No, sorry, Paul's in the study and he's, you know, knocks on Timothy's door and says, Timothy, look, you're my boy. And you're going to go down to church, down to Ephesus and going to look after it. And Timothy's like, you set it up, they're doing a great job. He says, no, you're going down to the church of Ephesus. And then he says, but they're so old, they know more, they have more knowledge, they've been longer there. Like, what am I going to go as a young person going down into the church of Ephesus? Paul says, no, you're going. And so we can assert here at this particular point in time that Paul knew this and understood that his insecurity or his inadequacy was going to be the very thing that would rob him from his influence or his godliness. The very insecurity that you and I have is the very thing that can rob us and take us, take away from our godliness or our influence. And Paul had an understanding of this sort of stuff, but he says to Timothy, you know what? I'm sending you to go part of the believers. Now, you're going to be part of the believers. I don't know what sort of insecurity you have. I've got plenty. Ask my wife. Ask Heather. Ask anyone. But I'm challenged by Paul to not allow my insecurity to dictate my influence at work, at church, in family. And Paul's about to give Timothy the exact remedy to how we overcome our insecurities, despite your insecurities. He says, but, okay, kids, I want you to say, but, everyone, but. And if I was upstairs, the kids would have a big but, and I'd be like, Joel, that's way too big a but. But it's all right, that's a kid joke. Get away with it every time. But, set an example for the believers. Despite your insecurities, your inadequacies, set an example to the believers. Now, believers is an interesting term because that makes you the believers. It makes it in the church. Set an example in the church. Set an example in the family. Set an example within your church family. The very place that Paul was telling Timothy to go and figure out his inadequacies and his insecurities was within the family of God. You are challenged and I am challenged to work out my insecurities within a safe place because your church family, whether you think it or not, has actually got to and mandated to forgive you, as I said, and they have forgiven me 70 times, 7 times at least. You've got 490 times of grace. Gets technical after that. You've actually got a little bit more grace in this family than you might have in your own. You've actually got more love in this family where you can make the mistakes and you're allowed to make the mistakes. And you're supposed to because we work out our insecurities and our inadequacies within our loving church family. And you might be sitting there going, I don't know if I feel that love and that thing from my family in this church or in a church family. And I'm sitting there going, you know what? Sometimes I didn't feel like that growing up either. But I had to overcome that anxiety and that fear and that judgment that I may or may not have perceived, because my perception is often wrong from what's actually going on. And if it is going on, then I actually need to hang out with someone else, because they're going to show me more grace and more love within my family there than I've been shown before. And so if I want to overcome my inadequacies and my insecurities, I need to be in a place that's going to be accepted, and I'm allowed to make the mistakes. As Paul says to Timothy, set the example for the believers. It's the very place where we train our insecurity. It train to overcome our insecurity. And so I've got one of the things that the girls are going to help me out. And within the church here, I've actually got myself some weight. Yeah, put it on the floor, because otherwise that's going to go straight to my toe. I love coming to this church. And you know what? I had a mate, and he hit me up at the fire station the other week. He says, Cole, I know you've been going through some family stuff, and you and your wife have been doing IVF, and it's failed. He says, you've been honest with us, and I'm being honest with you. I want to let you know that we had a miscarriage. And I'm sitting there going, oh, dude, like, that sucks. What do I say to that? And then he continues on and he says, look, his wife sat on the couch for that one day and she was just in a ball. And he says, I just wanted to take it from her. I just wanted to take everything from her, and just I wanted to wear that and bear that. But she only got one day of that. Because the next day his father-in-law, her father, comes around and says, look, I've got some news. They hadn't told anyone about the miscarriage. He says, I got cancer. And he's like, what the heck is going on? Like, you know, his wife's name's Jess, not my Jess. It gets weird after that. But in that moment, he's sitting there going, and now my father-in-law's got cancer. And like, how do I make sense of that? And so I was about to, say something. And then, he says, it didn't even last a week. Because my sister, and I'm celebrating with my sister, even though my wife was hurting because she was about to give birth. And I was like, that's pretty. And he says, but in the labor, it was complicated. I'm thinking, they're going, oh man, like, this guy's had enough. It got complicated. And instead of having a labor and having a baby girl and a baby daughter, it was 24 hours, and the kid's now got poisoned through the labor and stuff like that, and sitting in ICU. I don't know about you guys, but I've got nothing to say to that. A guy that loses his own child, a sister that is born with a child that's now in ICU and can't breathe by itself and is poisoned, a father-in-law or has just been diagnosed with cancer, I can't compare with that. I can't say anything that's going to make that any better. But over the last 20-odd years, I've been working in a church and I've been living in a church family that actually prepared me for that situation. Because I wasn't afraid throughout the years to actually pray for someone and put my hand on someone in this church, in this family. You guys enabled me to sit there and pray and not be afraid of that. You guys actually helped me to develop my faith in such a way that when I could hear those things, I had something to give. And instead of not shying away, I could actually be present in that situation. And so in that moment, I was able to, flex a little bit of my godly influence. And I said, you know what? We're going to pray. And we prayed in that moment in the fire station. It doesn't matter that it was in the middle of the rec room or how weird it was looking. That guy's life in that moment just had God in that situation, yeah? And I think about us going throughout our own life, and we've got godly influence. This is Pat's weight, so it's probably much heavier than what I would lift. And we've got godly influence. And so often we get to those little situations in our own lives that someone's hurting or someone's in pain and someone's clearly needs something there to happen in their life. And we've got our godly influence and we go to say something, but the fear and anxieties and the insecurities, they actually rise up and we walk away. Though you lost that opportunity to love that person and to actually be meaningful. And I've been there plenty of times and I've lost that opportunity to be meaningful. And I think about, I go back to my training ground and my church family. And this is where I've been trained. And there's other people there and they actually know they've got godly influence, but they're too busy trying to flex something there and they are being reckless with it. We've seen these Christian people, you know who I'm talking about, and they're sitting there and they're loud and they're obnoxious and they are just trying to assert their own point of view, and there's a trail of destruction behind them. They're just throwing around this influence and it's just not even loving and they just don't understand the damage that they are causing. Then there's other people, you know what? I thank God that I got my situation right with Grant the other week, where we actually flexed our godly influence to a point that actually mattered. We were wise in that situation, that we let the Holy Spirit speak to that person, or even made an opportunity for the Holy Spirit to work in that situation. And for ourselves, within our own church family, we were practicing for just that time. So look, I don't know where you're at, but I want to say this church family has helped me become the man of God that I am now. This church family, if you let it, will allow you to become the lady or the man that you've called to be as well. And for our kids, they're going to become, you know, leaders in this faith as well. So I want to encourage you, if that's not how you feel, you know what? Talk to me later on. Talk to Heather. Talk to the person that brought you. Because this church family is going to help you become the man and lady that you've called to be, just as Timothy's church helped him become the leader that he was called to be as well. He didn't let his inadequacies or his insecurities rise up. He knew exactly the practicing ground, and the ground to make a difference starts here to then go outside. We're going to finish on that note.